This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is the first of two segments. The next one will be on Mac Rock and will air next week. That focus loosely on the Harrisonburg House Party Underground Club music scene, which evidently is rocking. All of us have dreams, right? But getting those dreams from here to there, from inside our heads to becoming part of reality, is, as Hamlet says, the rub. Doug Stanford, whom I'm about to talk to, has done just this. Doug's dream of creating and producing a show featuring new edgy music was hatched at Mac Rock years ago. This show, Doug Stanford's dream, Aux Send, was first a webcast and is now poised to air for the next 13 weeks on WVPT Public Television.
I went to the Mac Rock Film Fest in 2006, and I saw the premiere of Burn to Shine from, I want to say, Portland, Oregon. Seattle, totally forgot. Anyways, it's a DVD documentary series by Christopher Green and Brandon Canty, who used to be the drummer for Fugazi.
I have to say, you have your iPhone out.
So yeah, I took notes, so it would sound like I remembered this stuff. Anyways, there are this series of concert DVDs that take place in a house that is scheduled for demolish as a training ground for fire departments. So they invite these prominent bands and also not-so-prominent bands from whatever city's music scene to come in and play a song each, and they film it in a really nice way. It has this great feeling of intimacy and sort of just raw DIY sort of atmosphere to it.
DIY,
do it yourself.
Oh, okay. Duh.
So I really liked just the entire aesthetic, the idea that you could have really great bands in this venue that's just some house and produce it with a lot of great production value, both on the video and audio side. And it was just such a unique and neat thing. Secondarily, I work for a production company, Digico Shoot Post Design in Harrisonburg, and I was working with some new cameras we'd gotten. So I did a camera test of sorts to just kind of get a feel for how the cameras worked. It's a different kind of lensing than I had ever used. And I really loved how it looked and how it felt. It was in the living room of my old apartment. It felt intimate. It felt real. And it was a lot of fun. So that was sort of the next step in realizing, oh, I can do this. I don't even need a giant budget or any budget. I don't need a studio. I own recording gear. I have access to cameras. I can just do this. So why not do it?
Do it. You put it up as a webcast. And how did you let the world know about your webcast?
I think primarily the audience was built mostly through Facebook initially. I mean, it's certainly hard to find a way to grow an audience out of nowhere. I mean, it helps because obviously every band or artist that I have on the show has some following, some bigger than others. The idea is that each band brings their audience to the show and we pick up some of that audience that's interested in discovering new music and they stick with it. So over time, as more bands have come on, it's grown like that. Originally, there was a podcast component as well. And the podcast was featured in New and Noteworthy on iTunes for a while, which was great because we were seeing huge download numbers.
Yes, that's astonishing.
It was. It
Did
lasted.
You enter it or how? They just found
it. I have
it.
No idea what their selection process is, and I've never found anyone who has any clue what the iTunes ranking or selection algorithm is, how much of it is handpicked, how much of it is, oh, you had X number of growth in this week, so you're getting bumped up into New and Noteworthy. So that was great. We had huge downloads. We picked up some fans from that. And after a couple months, we were out of New and Noteworthy. But it was a really good boost for the show, especially in those first couple of months. The show has been available on a UK mobile television provider called Yamgo. It's a network of content channels available on mobile devices. It won't work on your computer at home, your laptop. But if you go to a smartphone of virtually any kind and go to yamgo.mobi. Auxend has been a channel on there since early 2011. On there, we have a viewership of some insane number of thousands. I don't know too much about how long we have their attention, but I know that hits-wise, it's in the tens of thousands per quarter, which is fantastic. It's interesting. For as many as I've done, there wasn't an intense amount of planning about how I was going to shoot it or how I was going to produce it, mainly because there weren't many options. I had always envisioned it more or less being just me working on it for the most part, especially in my home studio, which is really only slightly bigger in this room.
Which is tiny.
Yeah. for both the bands and me and the recording gear and the wall of amps that sit against the side of it.
So it was cozy.
It was cozy. It was intimate. It was personal. That was the entire point. I don't have stuff like a Steadicam rig or anything fancy when it comes to the camera gear. So it was a matter of, I have these cameras. I like how they look. I have a tripod and I have my hands. So I guess one will be stationary and I'm going to walk around with the other one. I want close-ups. That'll be more interesting than two stationary cameras. And with audio gear, I only own so many mics. I own a pretty ancient Pro Tools system. And so, I mean, it's more of working within my limited skill set and equipment roster that created this. But what can I do? What can maintain that feeling of intimacy without it beginning to feel overproduced? And also, what can I do with what I have at hand?
Did you get better at working within your limitations as you went on?
Now, I'd like to think so. I've learned a good bit about the things that can go wrong with shooting. I shoot it entirely with available light coming in the front windows on that spare bedroom. And so, I mean, I know now I only shoot between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. or else the sun's not going to work with me. I know it's horrible to overexpose that footage because with the cameras I've been using, they just clip and it goes from here's some subtlety to just this flat white, and it's painful. I've learned my setup has a lot of noise in the audio, but I've learned how to finally work around that, having done the equivalent of like 30 EPs in the last 2 to 3 years. So, I mean,
do you want to talk a little bit about how you work around it?
It's a matter of having learned which mics work well in the room I have. The room, I mean, it's just a spare bedroom in my house that I was able to dedicate to being a home office slash kind of studio environment.
Do you have soft walls?
Nope.
No.
It's just sheetrock. The carpeting from, I have no idea how old it is, popcorn ceiling and windows. I mean, it is not a special room. It is literally
it's just a
spare bedroom in my regular
but
house.
But it's not echoey.
No. It has oddly decent sound properties. It has, for the most part, it's a very dry signal that I'm able to get out of it, which is good for me because I do all of my atmosphere building in post, just because, once again, it's not a beautifully designed room. So it works well. I figured out how to mic acoustic guitars that work really well in there. I've learned how to mic a vocalist better when there's a drum kit 2 feet from them. And, you know, there have been a lot of challenges like that that I've gotten a bit better at over time, but geez, there's still a ton of room to grow, which is great.
Isn't it? How do you end up knowing enough to start?
I'm a JMU grad. I was a SMAD major with digital video and a music industry minor, focusing on the engineering side of it. So in school, I spent years learning how to edit video in Final Cut.
Maybe we better say
sure.
What SMAD is.
Oh, School of Media Arts and Design at JMU, digital video major, concentration. So my college education was heavily based around learning the software and the techniques and the philosophy behind editing video. Also, to a degree, shooting video and producing video. My career has been entirely in commercial production since more or less the moment I got out of school. I stepped into a creative producer role at TV3 locally. I became a creative director in TV3 Winchester when they opened that station. And then I'm now a producer at Digico Shoot Post Design. Musically, I spent 20 or 40 hours my senior year in the studio at JMU learning lots about mic selection, processing, Pro Tools. Back then, the school has since, I think, changed entirely over to Logic, which is sad for me because I'm not a huge fan of Logic, but it produces great sounding stuff, too, if you know how to use it right.
That's a different software.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I had these skill sets coming out of college.
So you actually learned things. You learned, we all learn things in college. But I think it's very interesting when you're going into sort of a technical but creative field. You learned both practical skill sets and conceptual skill sets.
Yeah.
In school.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because, I mean, I did take more or less all of my major and minor courses were directly applicable to what I wanted to do and what I've ended up doing with my life, which I know is not super common. And it feels almost more like it was like a vo-tech program of some sort, except it was, you know, a full-fledged bachelor's degree liberal arts program that was great. I can't really speak highly enough about the programs at JMU.
When'd you fall in love with video production?
I think like my last 3 months at JMU. I went to JMU for integrated science and technology to learn networking and stuff like that, but I discovered I'm terrible at it in about a semester. So SMAD's media arts seemed like a much more interesting field, and I ended up being not terrible at it. So I did it for a while, just kind of like, this is okay. But then by the last project that we had, it was to develop a short campaign of 30-second web ads for JMU security, cybersecurity. I realized, oh, geez, I actually really enjoy this. And
Why? What was enjoyable?
Something about being able to work. I mean, I've loved TV my entire life, much to my parents' chagrin. I mean, it was what I loved growing up. I fell in love with movies towards the end of college.
Now, what did you like? I suspect it was more than just zoning out in front of the tube.
It was a mixture. I mean, I loved to zone, but at the same time, there's something about visual, just aesthetics visually, that I'm very much drawn to. I like seeing a well-composed frame. I like being informed emotionally by just looking at something. I like how light and dark play off each other. I like visual storytelling, where you don't need to have dialogue to express things, which a lot of that can translate to kind of what I'm doing now. But yeah, you know, I just like how visuals can evoke mood and can communicate without having to say things.
That'll work.
I started to realize I was capable of creating that myself in a way that I didn't think I was capable of before that point.
And why'd you realize this? With that flight of ads?
Yeah, it was probably during that time that I realized, geez, this doesn't look quite as like student-esque as I had assumed it would. This is actually feels like a completed production. This feels like something that may not be a million-dollar commercial, but it feels like something that might be viewable. This all sort of comes back to my workplace. Working at Digico has been...
You want to say what Digico...
Yeah,
a little bit about it? Give them a plug.
Sure. Digico Shoot Post Design is a full-service production house in Harrisonburg. We do a lot of corporate communication, commercial broadcast video, and motion design and animation. My clients have included Travel Channel, Petfinder.com, Trex, Boeing, a number of clients I never thought I would have the opportunity to work with, especially working in a small town like Harrisonburg. It's a very small company. There's only three of us, but it's a company that has really supported, fostered, and encouraged creative exploration when it's possible. I would have never been able to create the show on my own because I didn't own cameras. I didn't have the experience of using the kind of cameras that I use on the show without having worked at Digico and without having them be so supportive of the show to give me not just cameras to work with, but time that I could be, I don't know, doing more paying work instead of a show that I've done for 2 years that has yet to turn a profit. Wanted to talk about quickly just a thing called Subterranea Collective. They are a collective in Richmond of artists. I've worked with a handful of bands off of there. An old friend of mine who I had produced an album for him when he was in high school started playing in a really unique band called Brother Wolf down there that is fantastic. They came up and played, recommended a band called Shiloh, which is now part of the Subterranea Collective. They came up and played a band called Night ID. All these different artists who are doing this really interesting, technically complex stuff that kind of blows my mind a little bit when I listen to it. I'm shooting this weekend 4 episodes, which are going to be the 2-season finale episodes of the show on broadcast in a single day. So it'll be like 12 hours of straight shooting with this group. But I've been blown away by how much they've accomplished in the last year and a half with pulling together unique and brilliant artists and supporting them in a way with venue locations, by hosting house shows, by putting out records, by providing production services when necessary. And it goes beyond music to a full range of media arts. So that's super interesting to me. Like when a music scene develops something that is that cohesive and strong.
Doug Stanford Show, Aux Send, premieres this Saturday at 10 p.m. on WVPT Public Television. Many interesting links are on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Back after a break with singing cobbler David Young and his lovely daughter and apprentice, Yvonne.